You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, Los Hombres, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. Boys, how we doing? You feeling as refreshed as I am?
Really?
I am. It's a new Wiebe. I get in some more yoga. We're going to get to that in the mailbag.
Bring
we have
some
people
additional flair.
Helping me out here. I just feel energized. You know why else I'm energized? Big news in U.S. soccer circles today, U.S. and North American.
I am taking my talents to South Beach.
Are you?
Is that the big news?
To find a new person to sit across from me.
Exactly,
here?
The decision.
Okay. Well, we'll have to deal with that pretty quickly here. But on the flip side, I guess, Jordan Morris, he's going to wear number 13 for Seattle Sounders.
Wow.
Seattle Sounders.
Was that intentional?
Yeah, it was. Fake Twitter accounts aside, if you weren't paying attention, Phasers set to stun, at Phasers set to stun. Pulled a nice trick on U.S. soccer and North American Twitter last night. Faked a Grant Wall report that wasn't true. Jordan Morris signed with MLS. He is a homegrown player for the Seattle Sounders. He signs what is reportedly the most lucrative homegrown deal in that program's history. He's going to wear number 13. Preseason starts tomorrow, Friday, for the Sounders, so no rest for the weary. Back from Germany, signs a contract, gets it done. He's right out on the training pitch. March 6th.
He'll be on the national team training pitch.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot he was headed down there. We'll talk about he and Jurgen Klinsmann here in just a second, as well as Jurgen Klinsmann and Benny Failhaber, because there was a little tiff between those two. It all came out from that MLS Media Day down in Los Angeles. Another quick note before we jump in on Morris. Greg Vanney, head coach of Toronto FC, will join us for the second segment. We had a very long, interesting conversation with him about a variety of topics, how all these players they brought in are going to fit in, how they're going to deal with that long road trip, and his thoughts on player development, youth development, MLS in North America. So wait around for that one. It'll be good stuff. As I said, Jordan Morris, his debut, March 6th. 7 p.m., I believe, Seattle hosting Sporting Kansas City at CenturyLink Field. So the Raven Green, or the Rave Green, it's not the Raven Green. It's like the black and red, but, you know, I don't think rave's a real color. You get to check him out.
Well, raving is a word, which is not what they use as their
color.
Yeah,
and clearly you did college wrong, Wiebe.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
just gonna leave that there.
I'm trying. I'm doing my best. Good one there. Good one there. I missed the Spinal Tap reference, but okay, I'll take that one. General thoughts on him signing, guys. I know that Taylor Twellman said on this show that we should be done pegging things as good for MLS.
I don't think resolutions are supposed to be for everyone.
Universal resolutions.
Yeah. Your resolution.
Certainly not letting Taylor Twellman make resolutions for all of us.
And I'm not doing any hot yoga. So I think these are individual resolutions.
Okay. All right. What do you make of this then, Dave? What's the? Is this a big victory for MLS? It's certainly a big victory for Seattle.
I no longer actually make assumptions on league-wide signings.
Oh, sorry.
I said it on the last show that the pure big signing part of it was for me was it was the last place that they could really improve their team and bring in a high-quality player, and they did so. Now, in saying all of this, he's played well for the U.S. national team at a really young age with no experience. We have no idea what's going to happen in the next year with him as a professional player, right? I mean, it's an unknown.
We have some idea.
Do we?
Yeah, he's going to play a lot of minutes. Probably going to play in a 4-3-3. He's going to get called into a bunch of national team caps, and he's a good player. I mean, it's not. I think we've sort of lurched in the other direction, you know, because we're still in the wreckage of the Freddie Adu era. Everybody's like, oh, we can't judge how good a player is going to be. We have no idea. It's like throwing a dart blindfolded. It's not. Like we know that this kid has blazing speed. A great first touch, a nose for the goal. He's shown it at every level. And you could project out and say, look, if he trains as well as he reportedly trains, then we know he's going to be a pretty good player. We don't know exactly what the ceiling is. You know, and you could take guesses at that point. But to say that we're completely flying blind here, I think is – a little disingenuous. Jordan Morris is a really, really good prospect, and he should end up being a really, really good pro.
And there's no doubt Seattle has an idea of what he's about. Of course, he came up in their academy, 27 goals in 28 games or something like that the year before he left for college, came back, played with their U23 team. They've been monitoring them. They have an idea of what they're getting here. Siggy Schmidt said in the press conference today that he has unteachable qualities. There's no doubt about that. We've seen the speed, the strength, that kind of innate nose for goal and an eye for a pass that we even saw with Werder Bremen. A quick note on Bremen. He turned down that contract offer, the one that he reportedly have, and came back. And Bremen, a little bit of sour grapes on their part. And sour grapes, that's my take. That got to be clear there. They said that he felt homesick and they didn't want somebody who didn't want to be there. All that is very, very fair, but it sounds an awful lot like a team fighting for promotion, and or not promotion, fighting against relegation. I guess it's in some ways the same thing, but they need a PR spin on that one. So he's trying to stay in the top division. All right, Dave.
It sounds like opposites.
Yeah. Anyway, Garth Lagerwey on this signing, he said, look, Jordan did what he thought was best for him, and at this time, that was the Seattle Sounders. Schmidt, again, our league is very different than it was 10 years ago. The development of players in our country continues to grow. Jurgen Klinsmann chimed in. He told ESPN FC this: I'm thrilled that Jordan decided to go pro. This is the really important decision. And I'm thrilled with the Sounders that he goes into an environment that he knows, that he feels comfortable with, and that he feels now that, quote, at this specific time, this is the best move for me. Matt, we've heard Jurgen talk a lot about MLS and the choice between MLS and Europe. It's been kind of this ongoing storyline within U.S. soccer for the past couple of years now. This quote, what do you make of it? I know that we're kind of at a point, not just us, but for a lot of people, that we're not really trying to parse what Jurgen says anymore, because it's tough sometimes to either get the point he's making, or you either spin around and he says, hey, that wasn't my point, it was actually this.
Yeah, I mean, he doubles back on stuff he says so often that it's not worth listening to him. It just isn't. And it hasn't been since about 2012. You know, he came into the job saying, oh, proactive possession soccer, and we're going to, we're going to be mentally strong in a way U.S. teams haven't been mentally strong in the past. And, his teams haven't played like that. We've consistently given up leads. We've consistently played really defensive the type of soccer that I think minnows play. And we've gone backwards aesthetically. And that's fine. Like, he's the coach. If that's what he wants the team to play as, it's his call, just like it's our call to either support or criticize it or find some happy medium. But the words he says are not usually worth listening to and putting much stock into.
Here is Adrian Hauer on Hanauer. Sorry, I'm having trouble reading.
You're having a shocker today.
I am having a little bit of a shocker. I'm still exhausted from last night. So, look, Hanauer said this: it is my personal opinion that Jurgen doesn't know any better than any of us what is best for the development of a player. And the point I was trying to make to some folks today on Twitter who were kind of chiming in on this and saying, God, why wouldn't he go to Germany? He's taken a step back. He should be doing this. Is that every player is different and every personal situation is different. And I think that's one of the things that we start to miss when we're talking about these much-hyped U.S. or Canadian or whoever they may be prospects. Each guy's going to respond to a different environment differently, and that person and the people around them, the people truly around them, family, friends, coaches that have been with them for a long time, are probably the only ones that have an accurate read on that. And I feel like in U.S. soccer, and I'm sure Canadian soccer, though I'm not quite as plugged into to their side of things, I feel like we project our hopes and our dreams and our opinions on players, and if they don't follow what kind of this pack mentality says, then we really jump on top of him. And I think Landon Donovan was one of the biggest victims of that in here. For me, if this is the place he thinks he can develop best, if this is the place that he thinks he'll become the best player, you let him go do it, because he's shown his decision-making process.
Yeah.
Has not failed him yet. He's gone against basically what Jurgen Klinsmann has advocated, and he's gotten call-ups, and he's performed well, and he's got overseas clubs sniffing after
him. In fairness, in Jurgen's comments in the last 24 hours, he hasn't complained about what he did.
It's true.
He said he went over, he gave it a shot, and the most important thing for him right now is his best environment. Jurgen says if he goes over there and fails and falls behind the eight ball, not only might he lose the next 3 years, we might lose him as a player forever. So both Jurgen and I think Andy Herzog both said comments like that, understanding that they have to find a place for him to push himself to the next level, to compete at a high level, but to also be whatever it takes for him to be comfortable to succeed at his highest level. And yeah, we've talked about this a million times with Landon, and is comfort or is outside your comfort zone? And that's what Jurgen keeps talking about. So in fairness, he has said that in this Jordan Morris situation. They gave him another outlet. They said, take a shot. He took the shot. He went and did training.
Which he should have done. Right. I don't think anybody can argue that going to Werder was a bad decision. That's what you do.
Especially in Seattle's offseason. Like, there's no reason not to. You went, it could have been a loan. He could have signed with Seattle and gone on a loan to look at it anyway, whatever it was. He went over there. He played well enough for them to give him the offer. Clearly, he's worth something to them as well. And he chose to come here and play in Seattle. And I think everyone has said the same thing. If he comes here and he starts and he plays at a high level and he plays alongside guys like Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey, who are international soccer players, he's going to have a good experience. But the question becomes at this point, I mean, is he ever going to go? And that's not something that he's going to talk about soon, and that's not something Seattle wants to talk about soon. But I think that's the next step with Jurgen is in 2 to 3 years, if he's playing well in Seattle, is he a guy like Landon who says, I like to live at
sure,
home?
But that's what I'm saying. That's that projection. Let the dude live. Like, let him play his first professional game. Let him have his first professional training session before we start saying, oh, well, 3 years from now, what's he going to do? Like, yeah, we just get too far ahead, and we want to rush the process.
And I think the bigger picture is that let's bury the notion, one that Jurgen has perpetuated, that that playing in MLS appreciably hurts your form. And I think that's where the conflict between Klinsmann and some of the league higher ups and owners has come. I mean, Clint Dempsey just had his best ever season for the national team, or best ever year for the national team in terms of goal scoring. Landon Donovan, in his last 13 games for the national team, had 8 goals and 9 assists.
Yeah, but aren't these tough numbers because of opponents in terms of...
No, I mean, in those last 13 Honduras games, I think 8 of them, 8 or 9 were against teams that went on to play in the World Cup. Okay. You know, like, these are guys that have been doing it for a long time, and there are different types of things that you could learn. And Jurgen hasn't been consistent with, again, it goes back to words and deeds. You know, you have to push yourself to get to the highest level. Well, Jozy Altidore had his best year in, 2012, 2013, when he was playing for AZ Alkmaar, and Jurgen ignored him. Jurgen didn't call him up for almost an entire year. Michael Bradley in 2011, 2012, was just settling into a starting job in Serie A, and Jurgen ignored him. Jurgen started Brad Davis in the World Cup against Germany. So, it goes back to parsing it, and a lot of the stuff he said, about Donovan specifically, he's playing well, but what does that really mean? This is where MLS hurts him. He was playing at 70%, 80%, and he was still dominant. That doesn't help anyone. He said that in June of 2014 to the New York Times. You could see how that would ruffle some feathers, especially when you then put in guys like Chris Wondolowski and Brad Davis, who are good players, but by all means inferior players to Landon Donovan at the time. So it's a mess to try to figure it out. And it feels like right now Jurgen is trying to walk some of that back, which is probably a good thing, but we'll see. You know, he has the history of saying one thing and then refuting it with his next media appearance.
And this is the basis, I think, of a lot of this conflict, let's call it, with Benny Feilhaber. And I don't think it's a direct conflict between the two guys in the sense that they're, you know, in the StubHub Center hallway yelling at each other. But Benny certainly went off on what the process is and who's getting called up and, you know, in particular, why he hasn't been called up. I think that's the more personal thing for him in this media roundtable that went down in Los Angeles with all the who's who of MLS. He had a lot to say about the national team and Jurgen. And you know, to kind of sum it up, he's saying that he doesn't think Jurgen calls up the best players available to him, and that he thinks that's a problem, that better players aren't getting opportunity, and it's you know, you're missing out on guys. He mentioned a Sasha Kljestan, a Dax McCarty, a Matt Hedges, guys that didn't get called up, Eric Lehigh. And I get Benny's point, But I also get Jurgen's response to him, which was, hey, Benny didn't show it for me in the camps he was in. I decided he didn't fit in. Same thing with some of these other guys. They just didn't fit. It's my team. That's the way it goes. But then you have to produce, as you said, Matt. You have to, you know, with the choices you make, you have to show that those were pertinent choices that are moving the program forward. I don't always see that. I don't want to spend too much on Jurgen versus Benny. Mostly because I feel like we're going to rehash what we've said ad nauseum on this show so many times. Is there anything new to pull out of this? Is there anything that we haven't pounded into the ground over the last two or three years?
I really think there is, and it's this. Part of the reason that the ignoring Failhaber was so frustrating for the last 2.5 years is because there were no other creative midfielders in the lineup to sort of take that burden. And Failhaber is a proven commodity at the international level, no matter what Klinsmann says. The guy has 45 caps. He's done it against Spain. He's done it against Mexico. He's done it in the World Cup. And to ignore that without calling in someone else who can do that sort of thing and pushing it all onto Michael Bradley's shoulders did the team a disservice and did Michael Bradley a disservice and obviously, you know, did Benny Failhaber a disservice. But now Jurgen has started calling in guys like Darlington Nagbe and Lee Wynn. And those are both, I think, creative attackers, different from what Failhaber does, but fill the same role in terms of chance generation. So I think this means, in a certain way, that Jurgen has changed. Jurgen has stopped playing, you know, three or four defensive-minded midfielders, guys who are not necessarily pure D-mids, but defensive first, in the same midfield at the same time. And that's a type of evolution. And it's, you know, given the results that we've had over the last year, as a U.S. fan, first and foremost, that is the one thing I'm sort of hanging my hat on right now in hopes that we could be sort of pulled out of this I'm not going to call it a death spiral, but how about a nosedive? No.
Well, nosedive, I don't think it's death spiral. They had a tough 2015. There's no doubt about that. The Gold Cup still sticking in some folks' craw out there. And Jurgen Klinsmann himself said, hey, I think we've been pretty good. Gold Cup aside, because that was not a high point for the national team. We'll see what happens this year. Of course, they're in camp down there in Carson, getting ready for some friendlies at the end of the month. That's what we'll see, where some of this work will pay off, who will be in the lineup, how he'll mix those U23s and senior players. As it stands, Jordan Morris will be down there. I assume we'll see him in those games. He will have the name Seattle Sounders next to him. He'll wear number 13 in Seattle, the 21-year-old, a big signing for the Sounders. And let's be honest, Taylor Twellman resolutions aside, this was a win for Major League Soccer as well. Before we move on, before we get to Greg Vanney, I want to just touch on New York City FC and Patrick Vieira. He was officially unveiled, I think is probably the way that they're saying it. We knew he was the head coach. He was hired. He was at the draft table. He's been doing his thing behind the scenes, but he has not spoken publicly to the media yet. He did so on Wednesday at Yankee Stadium, a big event. I mean, folks from ESPN, Fox Sports, Univision, The Guardian, BBC, everybody was there. This guy has some real international cachet. I don't have to tell you that. It's a World Cup winner, after all. What he had to say, though, guys, well, it wasn't much. And it's kind of understandable at this point. He doesn't want to commit to things that he may not be able to deliver on. He doesn't want to commit to things before he gets folks in the saddle, before he gets players out on that field and sees what he has. So if you're looking for specifics on the way he wants to play, well, you didn't get them from this press conference. You got a little tease about NYCFC and why he chose it. He said that was his best option. He really liked the project. He had offers, he said, in first divisions in Europe. He took this one. He wants to build this thing out. That's all good news, really. It's all about your commitment to learning, to adapting, to knowing that you may not know every answer in this league, especially when you come in with a pretty dry resume as far as MLS is concerned. Anything stand out to us on this apart from that? I mean, I'm trying to rack my mind for some big piece of insight.
I think the weirdest thing was that he said the worst thing he could do is to bring Manchester City to NYCFC, to make NYCFC part of the Manchester City way, which is bizarre because he was the U21s coach there, and because Manchester City made Jason Christ live in Manchester for almost an entire year
and
so like, that he could learn the Man City way.
And learn it from Patrick Vieira, right? I mean, that's kind of the way it had been set up, is that he spent most of his time with Vieira in that U21 team.
Yeah, it was really strange to hear that. And I mean, you know, we just talked about Jurgen's problems with communication and messaging, and it looks like they're having the same thing in NYCFC, because it, all over Twitter, people are you know, using that fun little shrug emoticon. Because I mean, what else do you do in that sense? Like, it just kind of boggles the mind a little bit. And I mean, NYCFC have the potential to be a really beautiful trade wreck.
Or they have the potential to be a great team. Look at that squad. There is potential there. They've got something. It's maybe how you fit it together with MLS. You never know. I think that shruggy emoticon is basically like the word of 2015. And it's kind of what we're thinking when we look at Jason Christ right now. What's he doing? What's he up to? Not a lot of turnover this year in MLS. What, Dave, one or two jobs open, NYCFC being one of
them? Two jobs, but one was his job.
Yeah.
So Chicago was really the only job opening. And he didn't get it. And I mean, he can sit around and see what falls where in the middle of the season or throughout the season if there's spots. Otherwise, maybe U.S. soccer, or maybe he tries the Bob Bradley route and pops up somewhere random that we didn't know we were going to care about a lot, and then we all will follow that team.
Yep. We know he has the talent. We know he has the ability. We'll see what happens with Jason Christ. Right now, he is in camp with the U.S. national team. We reached out, asked, hey, maybe we could do a feature with you. He's not interested this time. So keeping it close to the vest, we'll see what goes down with Christ in 2016 and beyond. Let us know what you think. Where should he end up? What's up with Jordan Morris, Patrick Vieira in New York City? Jurgen Klinsmann, as always, a hot-button issue here in North American soccer circles. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, Greg Vanney, head coach of Toronto FC.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt, the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe, and in just a second, we will talk to Toronto FC head coach Greg Vanney. They made the playoffs for the first time in their history in 2015. Got knocked out in the knockout round, just one game, no home games for them. But perhaps 2016 is a different story. Matt, before we get to Greg, lots of questions to be asked about this team, although they're looking pretty complete. Last offseason, it was all about the big moves. This offseason, it's been about those shrewd within MLS veteran moves. What do you make of Toronto FC? Are they set up to get past what they did last year?
Yeah, I think so. They're going to be better defensively, which is the number one problem with that team last year, is that they just leaked goals. Drew Moore, Clint Irwin, I think those are really good. Stephen Betashore as well. Three really good pickups. Three guys who I think fit together in a way that the back line last year didn't necessarily fit. That said, I mean, I still have questions about the midfield. You know, if you look at Michael Bradley, his greatest gift is his ability to make the game big in an instant, make it big and fast with one of those 60-yard diagonals that, you know, ends up right on somebody's foot. And I don't know if Toronto have the guys to really take advantage of that. I don't know how Bradley, Osorio, Johnson, and Cheru all fit together in the same midfield. I don't even know what formation this team should play. You know, I look at it a little bit and I think maybe throw out a 3-5-2. But I mean, I don't know.
That would
I guess
be
that's
ballsy.
Why...
That would be real ballsy, going to the 3-man back line. We haven't seen that in MLS in a long time.
No, it's been a while, right? I think the last good team to really play it was the Revs of almost a decade ago. And I think Chelis, you know, fiddled with it a little bit in what was that, 2012 or 2013?
Wow,
and then
that's
he got
a name
fired.
Oh, man. Any Chalice fiddling, I'm open to discussion on that. David, this isn't just about these question marks. There's some things that they're going to have to deal with through the course of this season. That road trip to start, 7 games away from BMO Field, and then international duty could hit this team pretty hard.
Yeah, you're going to have the weird because you're taking off for Copa Centenario, but then you have Giovinco who might be going to the Euros, which is starting 10 days later. So his whole alignment, if Italy goes through the group stage and gets out, could be off, and he could miss 3-4 games because of that. It's not easy, but that's also when you say, I don't know how all these guys fit. Well, you have options now, right? You have more pieces. You have more depth. You have more guys who are legitimate MLS players. You're going to have guys who were starting last year that are going to be coming off the bench this year that you can go to for a game or two, which I don't really think they had many of those options last year. I think there was times when like they weren't playing an MLS level starting 11 at
right.
times from top to bottom.
But 2016, perhaps a different story. Greg Vanney in charge trying to take Toronto FC to that next level, maybe even MLS Cup. Who knows? A beautiful new stadium on the way. A nice squad,
not
Greg.
New stadium. Upgraded.
Updated.
Yeah.
Updated. It looks new. It's going to have a different look to it. Come on.
Oh, so
now.
If I come in with a new haircut, I'm a new person tomorrow?
No, but you'll have a different look to it, a different vibe. A different vibe. Maybe you can go
like
for
a post-hot yoga vibe.
Oh,
I can only imagine.
Greg Vanney is on the line now. Let's get to him. Greg, how's it going?
Very well. How about you guys?
Doing good. Doing good. Now, most guests I introduce with a Twitter handle. I don't think you have a Twitter handle. Is that right?
That would be correct.
Not even a secret one?
I haven't went into that world yet.
Not even a secret one? I've heard tales of MLS coaches having the one that they use to monitor certain things.
No, we have people around here that can do that. I don't spend too much time on that.
Oh, gotcha. Well, you're spending a lot of time improving this roster. Better watch out. They've got some Twitter spies there at Toronto FC, plenty in the front office. Last offseason, it was all about, or not all about, but in large part, these big signings, Giovinco, Michael, Josie Altidore, guys of that nature. This year, it's more about finding the pieces that allow them to be the best players they are and making your team better. What was the philosophy on this offseason? What did you go into it hoping to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, you said a lot there. Last year was, Jermaine Defoe was on his way out, and it was about getting three designated players that we felt were complementary for one another and then continue to build around them. I think over the course of this year, we learned a lot about our team and the players that we had, and as well as, our DPs. And so we found where our strengths were and our weaknesses were, and we wanted to address those in the off season. And so one of our thoughts obviously was strengthening our defense in all aspects, not just our back line, but just overall our defending. And so we address that by, bringing in guys who know the league, who've been successful in the league, who understand, the MLS grind and how that looks and have been successful, have won championships, have won playoff games, have, supporter shields, things like that. And, so there's a lot less time transitioning guys who already know the league versus going international and bringing guys in. And then there's always an adaptation period. And so, for us, we focused inside the league, and we were fortunate to get guys that that we were going after.
Now, from what we're looking at, you guys may have added 5 or 6 new starters going into this offseason. Did you think that there was this much room to make this many changes?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we knew of a few spots we really wanted to address, but then I think one or two maybe others that. There were opportunities that arose over the course of the offseason for one reason or another. And, the guys that we spoke to all wanted to be here in Toronto, which, to be fair, maybe wasn't the case 3 to 4 to 5 years ago. It was, but guys are really wanting to come to Toronto, to play in Toronto, to play for the organization, the staff, the people that are here and the fans, and they see a great thing coming. And so, it helped us, and now with this year being the first season of having free agency, it helped us to attract players like that in free agency and guys who, who had enough tenure in the league to maybe say, I'd prefer to go to this place other than that place. It helped us in trying to acquire guys.
Greg, does free agency give Toronto a leg up? Because as you said, you guys have the facilities, the stadium's coming along, the investment on the squad is
the
increasing.
City, the fans.
Yeah, the even just the attention within Toronto it feels like for some clubs, you have an advantage in that free agency because you can offer so much.
Yeah, I think in theory, yes. I mean, it should. When players come out or have come through and seen our facilities, our training grounds, and the stadium is going through another renovation, so we start the season on the road again, but it's going through another wonderful renovation that's going to make it state-of-the-art. The game is very relevant in our market, and our team is very relevant in our market. All those things, for sure, help us as we go. But I think it's also about the culture that you're trying to establish and develop and within the organization that is what attracts people. Because to me, ultimately, in a lot of ways, players attract players. And when there's a good message or a good vibe that's coming out of your organization, it spreads around the league and people hear about it and they want to be a part of something. And then they, you know, when they have that choice, then they can make that choice. So for us, it's on all aspects. It's how we as a staff and as an organization want to respect and treat our players so that they in turn also say good things about us as an organization, and that attracts people. I've always felt that case, whether I was in an academy or youth club or anything, that you want to have a good message coming out. And so the culture that you create is key to that.
So Drew Moore was the free agent. Obviously, that's a big signing for you guys on the back line, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But you have Betasher, you have Clint Irwin as well coming in trade, Will Johnson in a trade. Take us a little bit behind the curtain here on these MLS trades. When you know that you're going to be working within the league and you know the type of player you want is one who's got MLS experience, who has the chops to maybe elevate you immediately, how do trade discussions work? How do you as a staff go about saying, here's our target, now how do we pull this off?
Well, it depends. Each situation is a little bit different. As you said, Drew was free agent, so we go after Drew and try to, present our case. And I've known Drew. I played with Drew for his first 2 years in the league in Dallas, so I've known him for a long time. And you use that to your benefit along with everything else that we have. Each guy is different, from Will to Steven. Steven was on waivers and not picked up, and so and we wanted to bring Steven here, and he had interest, and we instead of allowing him to get to waivers, we make a deal with them to try to get him here before he actually hits waivers so that we end up with him. Right. And so, Will and Portland were parting ways, it seemed like. And so, Will being a Canadian, it made sense for us to have that conversation. And this is another place that Will wanted to come. So then it comes down to resources. What do we have at our disposal to try to entice the other team to make the trade and all that good stuff. And that just comes down to what you have to trade. And obviously with Tim Bezpachenko, who knows the league and he knows in and out what resources we have available to us, he's done a great job of working with those clubs and making whatever deals are necessary to fit these guys into the cap, but also so that the other team feels like they're getting what they need out of the deal as well.
You mentioned Will's Canadian citizenship, and fans and us here on this show, a lot of times we look at every Canadian player that may be available and we start linking you guys to them. Do you consistently go back and keep checking? I mean, is it a focus for the team to try and find Canadian players that you can bring in? Do you constantly keep going back and looking at the Canadians who are overseas and seeing how available they are window to window?
Yeah, I mean, we keep an eye on all the Canadian players that are out there. We know that's it's key to our market and to our club. And I know our fans would love to see Canadian players. Ultimately, our fans want to see us win. And so it's we have a need as a team, and we're going to find the best player. Our first look maybe is there a Canadian player who could fill that role. But at the same time, we're trying to find the best player to fill whatever role that we need within the organization to try to help us win, because that's what our fans want. They want to one day see us lift the trophy and be a part of that. And if we do that, it would be amazing. So, but we always know, we have a scouting department that's pretty robust for MLS standards. And so we always know where the guys are and how they're doing and what options are out there for us in terms of Canadian players and really all other players.
And one of the players you brought in is Clint Irwin to play in goalkeeper. Yeah. There was a hole there with Joe Bendick leaving. From the outside, it looks like a good move, but why or is Clint Irwin an improvement on Joe Bendick? How does he make this team better?
Well, I would just say consistency. Joe's a good goalkeeper. I think Clint's a good goalkeeper. I think Joe, with his 3 years here, I think it got to a point where Joe needed a fresh start. That's just my opinion, and probably needed to go somewhere else to get that fresh start. For us, Clint has been a three-year starter in Colorado and has done very well there. You can see, obviously, in the league, you're looking for opportunities, too, where guys may not be positioned to be the number one. Clint is capable of being a number one in this league, but it sounds like Tim Howard or somebody is next to come to Colorado. So, therefore, that means the number one who's done a very good job in this league might be available. And so there's an opportunity there. And so Clint is a goalkeeper that we before we heard about the possibilities of a Tim Howard or someone else coming into Colorado, he was one that was already on our list of guys that we were pursuing. And it just happened to work out for us. But we think he's a consistent goalkeeper. He can make the save when called upon to keep you in the game. He's good size, and he's good. We think he's on the upswing of what his capabilities are as well. And so for us, it's a good opportunity and good timing for us.
Greg, you look at these signings and these trades and all the moves that you've made, at least so far, and there's a theme here, and it's the back line. And I don't think anybody's going to be particularly surprised by that. That's a place that you've been wanting to improve for probably the last couple of years. Kentari on his way out. It seemed like the chemistry wasn't quite right, and that's kind of what we've heard come out of camp after last season. What is it about defensive chemistry, and what was it about last year and what you're hoping to do this year that you think is going to be differently? Why didn't that group mesh?
Well, first, I think it's about consistency. I mean, any of the teams that have defended well in this league, and you'd probably say this of any league around the world, is you've got to try to get your top four or your group on the field together as much as possible. And we went into last season, and Stephen Caldwell, who was previously our captain, he plays one game and then he's injured by halftime of the next game, and then that then takes him into retirement. So one of the guys we thought maybe we would be relying upon during the course of the season, as well as a vocal guy and a leader, we don't have him for the entire year. So now we're looking to try to fill that space. And that's what we were looking for over the course of the year. But we lacked consistency in our back line. Mark Bloom, who was coming into the season to be our starter, with all likelihood, he was out within, I don't think he played 1 minute all last year. So we just lacked consistency in our back line, which is difficult because there's always changes. And then I think it's chemistry as in, for us, Damian Perkey is a very good center back. It's very difficult for him to be a leader of a back line because English is not his primary language, and he's a guy who needs to focus on his responsibilities. And so we're trying to find a leader next to him. And one of the toughest positions out there in the world to find, oddly enough, is a center back. And, I was fortunate to have a discussion with the Man City guys as they came through, and our conversation was whether you spend $40 million or you spend, $300,000, the hardest position in the market to come across is the center back who can do all the things that you want him to do. And so, and that's what we're going through, is finding the right group of guys that mix together the leadership that Drew Moore can give us, where he can play. He's not so concerned about himself. He can play outside of himself and communicate to players around him. We think will help guys like Damian, who is a very good center back when he can focus on his role. But now Drew gives us somebody who can communicate outside of that, who can speak to the whole line, speak to the guys in front of him. And that hopefully is the natural fit. Plus we have a group of young players that Drew and also can help sort of settle in if they were to play next to him. And I think we got a group now that fits together well. And we brought Steven in on the right side who's experienced, so he's going to make good decisions on his own, and we hope that the group will mesh together. We won't know until we get them all out there and hopefully get some consistent performances together.
Now, one thing you said there kind of piqued my interest, and it was about the difficulty of finding center backs on the market wherever you happen to be. And I'm kind of extrapolating a little bit on that, but on this show and just in general in conversations I've had with MLS, front office folks and coaches and fans and journalists, whoever it might be, about the depth of certain positions in MLS and where there's strengths and where there's weaknesses, I've kind of speculated that right back is one of the places that over the last year and a half or two I've thought has been a little bit weak. And Betasher is one of the guys that that's right there at the top of the level. I'm curious what you think about that idea, and is there a spot in MLS right now where you look around and say, boy, we don't have a ton of quality at this spot, so to get somebody of good ability is a really big win for us?
Yeah, I do think that the fullback positions is along that. I think the right fullback position, maybe in some ways in particular, is that. I think obviously always, I think the left back position is hard to find just because you're ideally looking for a left-footed player, which then makes the market a little bit smaller. then you're looking for a left-footed fullback who can play whatever way your team wants to play, whether it's attacking or whatever. So I think that can always be difficult. But I do think the fullback positions are tough because also in our league, you have a salary cap, and it's not like you want to spend big money on every single position. So there's certain positions where you want to try to find, you know, players of in a certain range. And so your fullbacks, and for a lot of teams are that they don't want to spend $300,000-$400,000 on the fullback position. So you're trying to find guys who are of quality, who have experience, who bring to your team what they need, but they play in the fullback position. And so, so it's very difficult to find those things. There are great fullbacks in the world, obviously, but most of them make a fair amount of money, and it's that doesn't really fit in some aspects to the salary cap structure that we have.
Talking a little bit about chemistry, you talked about the back line, but in the midfield, you've made some changes. You brought in Will Johnson, and there's a lot of questions around the league about how this will fit together and work for you guys. It felt like maybe Michael Bradley was a little all over the place at times last year. Is there a formation change coming? How does this all fit together for you in your mind going into preseason?
Well, I mean, we have our ideas on how we'll structure things, and we think we have good pieces to fit our changes in terms of what our system will be. We'll play that out over the course of preseason. We have our thoughts on. But really, again, it comes down, just like the back line, it comes down to the chemistry of the players in the middle of the field for us. But we think that Will provides us something, which is he has a tireless work rate. He's got a little bit of a bite to him. He's a guy who can get in front of the goal and make teams pay in front of the goal. But he's also got, like I said, that tireless work rate to work from end to end. And we do have a few of those guys. But I think now we can start to talk to Michael more consistently about where does he see his, not just where is he now, but where does he see his future for the next 5 years, and what does he want to be really great at, so that he's not trying to do everything, that he really can lock into a specific sort of role, if you will. But obviously within his role, he's got some space to work. But what is it that he wants to be, and what's his next step in his future for being great for Michael Bradley on the international level and everything else? And so, you know, he and I have had that discussion. That's between he and I. But but that's where we are now. Is we have pieces that everybody trusts, that everybody believes can do their jobs, and now guys need to be specific, a little more specific on what they're doing, and a little more precise, and be masterful at something instead of being good or decent at everything.
We've talked about the midfield. We've talked about the defense, goalkeeper. That leaves the forward line here. Josie and Gio is a pretty good 1-2 punch, and now we're seeing a bunch of stuff, rumors, I'm going to call them, about Marco Borriello, and basically the rumors are that he's linked with just about everybody, including Toronto FC. Is this real on your end, or is this some really good agent work getting this out in the press?
unless the cap is going up a ton, I don't see how it's going to fit into our system. So he's a player of interest, and we definitely admire his work. But at the same time, I just, in terms of what we have available to us, it's not something that we could be on the immediate pursuit of, that's for sure. So we like the guys we have. We like the forward options that we have at the moment. The one downfall we have is that we potentially lose both of them at international duty at certain points. But that's part of it. But we like our team. We like our forwards. We like the depth that we have. And we're not heavily active in that side of things, I would say.
Do you see any more moves coming? The one I look at your roster, and the one thing I wonder is where's the speed come from? Is there a game breaker? Because Jackson's gone, Robbie Finley's gone. You look at those wide midfielders, maybe more guys that want to tuck in and come inside than play out on the wings.
It's possible. It's possible that there are things coming. We're looking at some younger players that we could add to our roster, and Bass is one of the things that we're looking at, just somebody who can stretch the team out a little bit. But we think, Josie, as he gets back and if he stays a little bit higher up the field, Sebastian's quick. And sometimes for me, it's not all about breakout speed. It's about the runs, the timing of the runs, the connection between the passer and the runner, and you don't need necessarily, you know, breakout pace. It's nice to have in this league from time to time, but I think it's not a necessary or a thing that you have to have. But we will have options of guys who do have pace on our roster now. We have mostly some younger guys that have that, but If something comes up and it's the right fit for our team and it makes sense, then it's definitely something we would consider.
Certainly something to look out for. Another thing for Toronto FC fans to look out for is the lack of home games to start the season. Same deal as last year, basically. You had 2-4 last year. That's pretty good. You got some points as you got going. What did you learn from that maybe you're going to implement this year? Are there things about, you know, the way you guys travel or the way you train? Is there kind of a best practices to having that really long road trip at the start of the season?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, last year we took a strategy where in order to not play, let's say, 8 games on the road, we asked for an extra bye week in that beginning stretch. And what we ended up doing is finding no rhythm in the first 6 games because we were playing a game or 2 games and then we were off for 2 weeks and we were playing a game or 2 games and we were off for 2 weeks. And the guys were just having a really hard time establishing any sort of rhythm. And so, instead of what we said is we want to play and we want to play through this and we want the guys to get that rhythm and get that week to week game to game rhythm going. And so we've worked that, we've adjusted that a little bit in terms of how we, you know, in what little ways you can try to help adjust your schedule. We chose not to take our byes right at that beginning moment. So that's one thing we did. Second is, you know, we'll approach our preseason slightly different than our approach to the beginning of the year, obviously from the standpoint of understanding that we're on the road and sort of our defensive structure and things like that, that we will, our mindset a little bit and how we sort of measure our performance indicators at the beginning of the year might be slightly different than they were at the beginning of last year. Just because we have a good feel for now for what that's going to look like. And because we've brought majority of the guys back, we have some consistency. So a lot of our team is going to know what this looks like and knows what it feels like. And it won't really be a stretch for anybody in terms of, you know, understanding what's to come. And last year, I know we were feeling out some things along the way and try to adjust along the way. So
first 7 games on the road for you guys, first 2 games in New York. Is there a thought of not traveling back to Toronto and staying in the New York area?
No, it's just such a close trip, I think. And given the fact that we're in preseason, we're away a lot just to get the nice weather, to get the grass fields, to then come back and then stay on the road for another week and then add multiple games after that. We want to try to spend as much time as we can in our home city and in our beds and with our families. Otherwise things really start to build up, but we'll come back. It's a short trip. It's simple. It takes us, you know, an hour and a few minutes to fly over and we've got that planned out. So
one of the guys that you'll be facing off against now in New York is Patrick Vieira, introduced officially yesterday. I mean, we've known for a while. When you look at this hire, when you look at Patrick, obviously a legend playing career wise, getting started in his first team managerial career. When a guy like this comes into MLS, inevitably all the chatter is that, oh, you need somebody who knows the league, yada, yada, yada. Well, what do you make of a hire like this and going against a guy like Patrick Vieira on the sidelines?
I've admired his career and him as a player. I've always respected everything that he's done as a player. And I know he comes from, which interesting for me is he came from, you know, the reserve squad or from a younger squad over at Man City. So he has the basis for teaching, which I think you kind of have to have in this league a little bit, especially as you get young, whether it's young American players or young players coming through, there's still an element of teaching in MLS that maybe you don't have in some of the big leagues. And so for him working with young players, he probably will have that under his belt. But obviously having been at big leagues in terms of managing his DPs, he probably has some of that. So what I do think has always taken some of that adaptation for guys is what you mentioned, which is this league is just a little bit different in various ways and the nuances of that league. Sometimes it takes guys, you know, a little more time here or there to make those adjustments. But for me, if he works hard and he takes the league serious and looks at the league for its challenges and figures out how to make those adjustments and adjust his style accordingly, then I don't see why he can't be successful in this league. You know, I think it's just a matter of, respecting what MLS is and trying to figure out your ways to be successful within that.
You are a guy that started out academy director in Toronto and dealing with that and then moving in to the head coaching job. For people out there who maybe haven't gotten a chance to see the TFC2s or players in the academy, is there any one specifically that young players that you're looking at as guys that can be successful kind of soon, or is there a timeline in terms of when that academy can become a factor on the first team?
Or even the guys like Jordan Hamilton who are in the first team but haven't necessarily jumped in yet.
Yeah, I mean, we have guys. Jordan is a guy you mentioned. Chris Manillo is a guy we signed a couple a year ago. He's in the mix. The challenge for Chris Manillo is he's also a central midfielder, and that's it's a thick area for us in terms of depth. But he's coming along very well. Q Roberts, who's one of our goalkeepers, has looked very solid last year in the goal for TFC 2. And obviously we have Bono as well, but Q coming from through the academy system. And we have a lot of players that we're very, very pleased with in terms of their progress, and hopefully guys that will make an appearance and hopefully play a factor in the season. But we think this past year, our USL team was the youngest across the country. I think our average age was in the very, very low 20s. We were, I think, by far the youngest in terms of amount of minutes played and started. And so we see our TFC 2 team is really that, as a development squad in process. And because they were so young, we want these guys to continue to get matches and prepare themselves for the first team. We do have a number of guys that we feel are very talented and are close to breaking through. It's just, again, it's a matter of timing for them and putting them in opportunities where they can be successful.
Greg, last one for you. We know we've taken a bit of your time here on this Thursday. That integration process, I think, is the thing that MLS continues to struggle with. You know, obviously mm-hmm. we've got to produce better players in the academy to have them break through quicker, but it's kind of that integration between the academy and then into the first team. USL is bridging some of those gaps. When you look mm-hmm. at this, you know, this push to get more and more homegrown players in the league, but not just in the league, to impact the league, what does mm-hmm. MLS need to do? What do coaches need to do? What do players need to do to make that more of a reality?
Well, I think it's the integration of what's happening in your academy to what's happening in the first team. You know, from a role standpoint, I think it's very difficult to ask a young player to come into a team if you don't have a very clearly defined system and a very clearly defined role for that player, and they get onto the field and they're having to improvise and figure things out and work in sort of this free flowing system. I think it's a very difficult challenge to ask a young player to do that. But if you have a nice system that is known, and your coaches that are below you in the academy and your TFC 2 team and everybody, there's a clear understanding of what that looks like, so that when you take a young player and you integrate them into the first team, then they have a very clear understanding of what they need to do on the field. And I think you set them up for success, and then you find the right moments to get them in. And what I've always felt like is there's always been, in a lot of clubs, there's a disconnect between what's happening at the first team level and what's actually going on down at the academy level. And the closer we can bring those two together, and our academy directors can work closely with our first team coaches, and we can spread those ideas down from top to bottom, the more success that we'll have with the young players. And I think you've seen that with the teams that have been relying on, whether it's Dallas and Oscar, who came from his academy in Dallas and had really set things up there. And now as the first team coach, he has a lot of confidence in those young players, and he's given them an opportunity, and they know what to expect when they go up and play for him. And so I think that continuity is really important with our clubs, and the players will grow, and they'll get that, and then they can get that experience that they need at the professional level with the USL as well. I think I think that was one of our biggest steps of the league to really bridging the gap between our young players being successful at the first team level.
Bridging the gap, but as always, it's all about that first team. Toronto FC, a big road trip to start the season. Greg Vanney at the helm, Tim Bezpachenko helping pull along there as well. Greg, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
we'll let
guys.
You get back
Appreciate
to work. Good luck in the coming year. All right.
All right, thank you. Take care, guys.
Big thanks to Greg Vanney for giving us his time on this Thursday. Next Monday, Toronto FC getting together for the first day of preseason and then the first game of the season, both for them and for Major League Soccer. Sunday, March 6th, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, Red Bull Arena. The Red Bulls hosting Toronto FC. Let us know what you think of anything Greg said there at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back right into the mailbag, yoga advice. Yoga, yoga, yoga.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, Dave Goss, Matt Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are into the mailbag. We will get to yoga in just a second. Just letting this Bowie flow. Just letting it flow. Fade away for me quickly. Or not so quickly.
Doyle, do you want to do this or do you want me to?
That's Matt the Hoople. That's not Bowie, but yeah. He wrote that one.
Well,
he wrote that one.
But Wiebe, here's the thing. If Wiebe doesn't say that, then I won't look up from work in 2 days and see that I have 25 tweets, which I hadn't noticed because people are culturally shredding me and Andrew apart. This time it'll just be Andrew. He's out on his own island.
I can take it.
You're on your ice flow.
I'm a big boy. Yeah, I'll put things out there.
Guys, I just want you to know that I've begun building this list, which I said I should have earlier, a Google Doc of movies that I should have
seen.
You got
to see Spinal Tap.
That is on high on the list.
Okay. All right. You'll get to that. In the meantime, let's do a little MLS talk here before we get to the stretching or yoging or whatever you want to call it. That'll be addressed in just a second. Giovanni Dos Santos says Jonathan Dos Santos wants to come to MLS, wants to come to L.A., Matt.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Are we going to have a fourth DP slot? This seems like a discussion for next year around this
time,
actually, right?
I feel like we're hearing rumors when it first was going to happen that when Jonathan wasn't playing
rumors
at
rumbling.
All in Spain, not rumblings,
okay.
Just the rumors.
Okay.
There wasn't yet wildebeest down in the ridge
in the
gorge.
Ravine, yeah.
Yeah. But, so we heard those rumors.
I have no idea what that meant, by the way.
It was supposed to be a Lion King quote, but I couldn't.
Wow.
I couldn't.
That was a disaster.
I couldn't get there on any level. But yeah, so that's what we had heard, and then Jonathan Dos Santos actually started playing really well in Spain.
Yeah,
right.
And now, has a career.
Look, I mean, if they're going to get him to replace Gerard after this season, that makes a lot of sense, and I think obviously it would resonate with the fan base. But I can't figure out the logistics of it for 2016.
Yeah, it seems tough for this year. Dave, let's jump into the mail, see what we got. I'm sure people are probably ripping me apart here.
Well, people are surprised that I've said something somewhat correct. So we have an email here from Alan who said that Dave's correct that yoga can include strengthening but doesn't have to, as there are many types of yoga. What distinguishes yoga is a focus on the breath concurrent with the physical moves. In some classes, the teacher will give instruction on breathing along with the poses, and there are even special breathing techniques. At risk of getting all new agey, the breathwork helps achieve that mind-body connection that is one of the goals of yoga. For me, and I consider myself to be a regular guy, the focus on breathing blocks out mental distractions and keeps me in the moment, so that in that regard, it has things in common with meditation.
Yeah, and I would echo that, although I'm having trouble just breathing, let alone timing my breathing to movement. But I can feel that, you know, when you breathe in and out, you're deepening stretches and things of that nature. I was a little thrown off last night, though. I went and they had us doing chanting, and I kind of, not for me, the chanting, I don't think. And it's distracting.
Oh, you're just
it's
too cool
too much.
Now you're just too cool for school all of a sudden?
I was self-conscious about the chanting. Initially, I didn't do it at the end of the class. I felt like, look, I'm not going to be the one who doesn't participate, so
right.
I chanted, but I just
aren't you too old to be self-conscious? I mean, you're closing in on 30 at this
point. Yeah, no, that's why I chanted in the end. It was most of my self-consciousness is just don't fall down, or oh god, I have to go into child's pose while everybody else does normal yoga things because I'm just too tired or hot or whatever it is.
Yeah,
that's most of where it stems from. Maybe I'm just
Well, I don't
just,
think you're
getting comfortable.
That, by
yeah,
the way.
No, I know I have over years.
But someone was just telling me a story. They interviewed Maya Angelou, and she is extremely self-conscious.
Oh.
She has imposter syndrome, which is a syndrome where you don't actually think you belong where you are, and you think you're scamming everyone.
Oh, I got a raging case
and
of
people
imposter
are
syndrome.
You think people are going to figure it out and be like, what's this guy or girl doing in this position or whatever? So there you go. That's what Wiebe's like.
So now all those folks that email in and say, get Wiebe off the show. Now
they know
they
exactly
know.
What
now
the deal
they
is.
Know.
Matt
You're
Robert
into the core.
Matt Robert Tiello, who also has a fiance who's consistently sending him yoga videos.
There's a consistent storyline here.
Yeah, and he says Goss for once is right, that it's not just stretching, something which I was not surprised in the least, surprised and befuddled. I don't really know why he said that, but it also includes strengthening. Not only does it stretch you out, you get some body weight resistance work, and ultimately will be stability and strength without ending up looking like Ronnie Coleman. Think along the lines of planks. They don't look hard, but after 30 seconds to a minute, you're working hard and will feel the burn and soreness later. Is that right. How you feel?
Yep, that is how I feel.
But the thing is, like, so if I do stretching and then I do push-ups and planks or sit-ups or whatever, doesn't that cover the spectrum of yoga then?
I think so, but I believe that...
Oh, I have to remember to breathe.
Yep.
Like Weeby.
Yeah. And if you're out of breath, it makes it really
yoga
hard.
Is active stretching, lengthening, stretch, strengthening, and meditation. Jeez, all
you
in
are
one.
Struggling today.
Yeah, it's a lot. These emails are very long. Weeby's foray straight into hot yoga is commendable. Not sure if he dabbles in non-hot yoga prior to this, but hot yoga is difficult to do. Not only are the sessions at least an hour, but they're usually in a humid room with temperatures at around 105 degrees, which is the part that I don't get for
you.
It's like,
yeah, it's
if I
hot.
Got into the building and someone's like, there's a 105 degree room there, I would be dripping already.
Oh,
like
they
would have to put towels at the door. Otherwise, there'd be water flowing out of the door.
My biggest problem with all of this, and we got to get out of here in just a second, so I'll leave it at this.
No, we should have gotten out here 3 minutes ago.
My biggest problem with this is like the amount of laundry I'm now producing from it, because it's two towels.
Right.
And it's very humbling. Like, where did all this moisture come from?
Is it not Bikram?
I don't know.
Okay.
You're asking a lot of specifics that I don't know. I walk in this room. It's really hot. I stretch with the teacher telling me what to do for an hour and whatever.
Yes, next round of emails, we'd like to know whether hot yoga is just Bikram or they're the same thing.
I think actually we should just leave that as a rhetorical, almost like metaphysical question.
Like, what
is
are
it,
we?
Is it not Bikram? Ponder that over
breathe
the weekend, everybody.
In, breathe out and consider that. That's it. Big thanks to Greg Vanney. On this Thursday, a lot of teams gathering for preseason, including the Sounders. Jordan Morris headed down to U.S. National Team camp. A lot of stuff to talk about. Come Monday, we will dive into what it will be kind of a preview ahead of the 2016 season. Let us know what you want us to talk about at Extra Time Radio, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. With that, we're out. Enjoy your weekend.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.